The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Susan Dellinger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, July 2018, Volume 20, Number 7. And this is the first of four installments of the July issue. On this month's cover, Oprah sits in her garden in Maui. She is surrounded by hydrangeas in full bloom, blues and pale purples. And she's sitting on a stack of logs, and she has on a crisp white shirt with the sleeves rolled up and this massive full-length, very full pinstriped skirt. And the headline this month reads, "What would make you happy? If you can define it, you're one step closer." The big white O for Oprah Magazine sits in the upper left-hand corner on a magenta background. And now for behind the scenes. We have another picture of Oprah here in her garden in Maui, and the headline is Earthly Delights. For our July cover shoot, we headed to Oprah's literal happy place, her garden in Maui, which looks out on a mountain range with trees galore. There she soaked up the sunshine, and with a sweep of her Brunello Cucinelli ball skirt, sat down to admire her flowers. Oprah said, "If this isn't heaven, I don't know what is. I could stay here forever." Since forever wasn't a practical option, she did the next best thing by picking a few perfect hydrangeas to bring inside. She went on to say, "I just want to take a little of this bliss with me." And across the bottom of this page, we have some fashion ideas from Oprah. And the heading is called Mood Boosters, a few things that make Oprah's day. And we have some very relaxed casual clothing. And the main color that you're seeing here is what's called English Rose. It's kind of a peachy beige, sort of a rose beige. It sort of varies in between those two. And we have some casual items here and some shoes and some tortoise shell sunglasses. So let's start out with where Oprah says, "I love a maxi skirt, especially one that moves." This is a crinkly crepe fabric that has a wide elastic deep yoke up at the waistline and a little bit of a ruffle at the bottom of that 8 or 9 inch yoke. And then the crinkly crepe is just nice and sheer with a lining underneath it. The skirt is $375 from Zimmerman.com. Next to that, in a little bit darker shade of this kind of rosy beige, is a jumpsuit. The top is a wrap style, and it's got about a 3-inch wide band that goes from the waistline around the neck down to the other side of the waistline. It has a self belt, and it's got some pleats there at the waist, so that the legs are full through the hips and thighs, but then it goes down to some skinny cuffs at the ankle. The comment here is, "I live in a jumpsuit, on a plane, out to lunch, you name it. This one is as soft as a pair of pajamas." It's $198, and it is from leloons.com. Then we've got some sunglasses here from Celine.com. They're $460, and Oprah says, "Oversized frames are my thing." They're a nice square frame with kind of a horizontal gist to the tortoise shell design. And next we have some big hoop earrings. They're gold. They're on a post. They don't loop through the ear, but the post goes through the ear. And each earring has a white pearl on it. So this pearl just sort of slides on the big hoop. They're $145 from MaryMcGill.com. And Oprah says, "I adore pearls like this lightweight classic with a little edge." Our next clothing item is A sweater. And Oprah says there are few things nicer than a loose linen sweater in the summer. This is from Maylene Berger, and it's $395, and you can get it at netaporter.com. This is a little more to the peachy shade than the sort of rose beige, and it has a yoke that is sits just right kind of at the bust line, and a deep V, and which just sort of overlaps a little bit and ends there at that yoke. And then we have drop shoulders so that we've got a seam on the top of the arm that kind of matches where that yoke line is. And then across the bottom, we've got a nice 3 or 4 inch hem, typical sort of sweatshirt look. And it is asymmetrical, and it's a little shorter in the front, about 4 or 5 inches longer in the back. And next, we've got some off-white sweatpants. Oprah says these sweats have hidden pockets, a slim leg, and just the right amount of stretch. Just a classic sweatpant here with the little cuff, elastic cuff at the bottom. They're $170 from bleusalt.com. Now, what does Oprah recommend to wear? What kind of shoe does she recommend to wear with these items? We have from Fit Flop a gold sandal. It has a white sole, a gold insole, and then wide quilted gold crisscrosses. You've got to love a gold sandal with arch support, Oprah says. This leather slide is $250, and you can, it's called Louche Lux, and you can get it at FitFlop.com. And a couple of more items on the page. We have a candle here. Oprah says, I've smelled a lot of candles, but this one with mint, cypress, and basil made me swoon. It's $110 at millspharmacy.com. It comes in a little black pot. And our final item is a tote. And we're in that sort of peachy shade here. It has this embroidery or crewel work on it. Big French knots creating some stripes and some diamond shapes. Oprah says, I can throw everything in here. The tote is from Ink and Alloy, and it's $90. And here are Oprah's opening comments, and they are accompanied by another picture of Oprah. She's walking in a path in a wooded area, and her two puppies. Well, they're great big dogs, but they're always our favorite little puppies, aren't they? We see Oprah from the back. Her hair's in a ponytail, and she's wearing a navy blue long sweater. It comes almost to the knees, and some navy blue sort of tight-fitting pants. Maybe they're jeans, maybe they're sweats, and some white tennis shoes. And she's walking on this kind of twisting path. Oprah says, when you picture happiness, what do you see? A carefree life of nonstop glee where nothing ever goes wrong and everything is rosy and joyful forever and ever? Or do you imagine an existence that's quiet and still, calm and centered? Do you picture a life not necessarily free of troubles, but one in which setbacks can be dealt with because your heart is full and your focus is on what truly matters? If you guessed that, we're more interested in that variety of happiness than the one in which you run around beaming like someone in a toothpaste ad, you'd be correct. And if that kind of peaceful, easy feeling is what you're looking for too, you're in luck. This month, we're exploring exactly what it takes to achieve it with help from a Yale professor whose class on happiness has been the university's most popular course ever. Join us as we lift our spirits, then try the exercises yourself. I can promise you the experience will be eye-opening. Speaking of eye-opening, don't miss the fabulous array of new books in our annual summer reading guide. This year, we're diving into stories set across America. Top it all off with a homemade ice cream sandwich. The yummy starts on page 92, and you might just have the perfect recipe for your own version of happiness. Read on, Oprah. Now let's look at the reading room. And this month, it's the special book club edition. Oprah's 2018 Selection Book Club. Deliverance is the title of the article. For nearly 30 years, Ray Hinton's home was death row, where he desperately hoped the courts would finally acknowledge his innocence. Now he's free, and his memoir, The Sun Does Shine, is the new Oprah's Book Club pick. Oprah says, I was in Alabama interviewing social justice warrior Brian Stevenson and noticed a book on his desk. As I was leaving, he gave it to me, and for the next 2 days I was glued to Ray Hinton's soul-searing memoir. It will stay with me forever. As Stevenson, who personally took up Hinton's case 12 years into his sentence and finally got him released from prison after he'd served 28 years for two murders he didn't commit, puts it, the tale is, quote, a textbook example of injustice, end of quote. I was honored a few weeks after I finished reading it to sit down with Ray and find out more about what he went through and how, remarkably, he kept the faith. And here's the interview. Oprah. Ray, I've been listening to people's stories for a long time, but yours is about the most incredible. You spent almost 3 decades in prison for crimes you were not guilty of. Take us back to your arrest when you were 29. Ray. I was cutting the grass in the back of the house where I lived with my mother in Burnwell, Alabama. After a few minutes, I looked up, and there were two white gentlemen standing there. One asked, are you Ray Hinton? I said I was. They said they were detectives and had a warrant for my arrest. When I asked what for, they wouldn't say. They handcuffed me and put me into the squad car. Oprah, your mom was still inside? Ray, I begged them to let me tell her what was happening. They took me into the house in handcuffs. Mama screamed and hollered and told them I hadn't done anything, but it didn't matter. It wasn't until later that they said the charges were first-degree robbery, kidnapping, and attempted murder. Oprah, what did you say? Ray, I said I hadn't done any of that, but they told me that because there would be a white prosecutor, judge, and jury, they'd make sure I'd be found guilty. Oprah, how did you respond? Ray, I asked the detective when this crime took place. When he told me, I said, thank you, Jesus. I was at work at that time, and my supervisor, who was white, could confirm that. I gave the detective his number. Oprah, so you figured your boss would clear up the misunderstanding and the police would realize they had the wrong man? Ray, yes. The detective left the room. When he got back, he said, the good news is your alibi checks out. The bad news is we're going to charge you with capital murder. Oprah, now your mother was one of those strong black Southern women who believed in authority, that the police were there to help. Ray, yes, and that's what I believed. Oprah, so then they go back to your mother's house and take her gun, which hadn't been fired in 25 years, and claim the bullets matched those found at the crime scene. Ray, they dusted it off and polished it up and lied. They actually lied. Oprah, and after you were charged, you never even got to go home. They held you for 13 months before you went to trial, and the trial was a fiasco. They'd already decided. Ray, when I was indicted and the judge read the charges and asked if I could afford an attorney, I said no, so he appointed one. That attorney didn't even ask me my name. He told me he hadn't gone to law school to do pro bono work. I asked, would it make a difference if I told you I was innocent? He said, the problem with that statement is that all of y'all is always doing something and then saying you didn't do it. Oprah, take us to the courtroom after a year has passed and the ballistics expert your lawyer hired, missing an eye and no expert, has messed up badly. At that point, did you think, I'm done for? Ray, until that moment, I thought justice would prevail. When I realized it wouldn't, it just sucked everything out of me. But I wanted to protect my mama. I didn't know if she understood that conviction meant the death penalty. Oprah, you were immediately put on death row, where you had some very dark nights of the soul. You literally stopped speaking. Ray, I didn't speak for the first 3 years. The guards thought I couldn't talk. It was as if God had taken out my vocal cords. Oprah. But 3 years in, you heard the man in the next cell crying, wailing, and wailing. Ray, he'd lost his mother. I'd lived next to him and never even known his name. I wasn't there to make friends, but I thought of his mother and my mother, and how from an early age mine had taught me compassion. So I hollered through the wall, "Is something wrong over there?" At first he didn't answer. Then he told me his mom had passed. I said I was sorry. I told a corny joke and we laughed a little bit. The next morning, I realized my voice was back and my sense of humor too. Oprah, on that night you realized you weren't the only man on death row. Ray, I realized we were both still human and it's human nature to reach out. Oprah, all that time you knew you were innocent. Did you have to let that go? Ray, yes, that and my life as it was, gone. To stay sane, I lived in my head where I could travel and imagine. In my mind, I played a championship game with the Knicks. I won Wimbledon 5 times. If the Yankees needed a home run, I came to bat. Oprah, but you also started getting to know the other prisoners, like Henry. Ray, Henry was KKK. His father was a Klan leader who'd gotten upset that a black man hadn't been convicted of killing a white man and ordered his son and other Klansmen to kill the first black man they came across. They hanged that poor kid. Oprah, Henry was convicted of that crime and would become the first white man to be executed for a lynching in 84 years. Ray, yes, I didn't know that's who he was at first. We were just talking. Oprah, nobody can see each other on the row, so you know one another only by voices. Ray, yes, Henry had been taught to hate all his life. He didn't know any different. Me and some of the other blacks there didn't judge him. Since everyone on death row was accused of killing somebody, we became friends. Oprah, knowing what he'd done, you could still be friends? Ray, I was there for something I didn't do. I didn't know whether he'd done it or not. Oprah, you never asked him? Ray, that was between him and his God. Oprah, but he eventually admitted he'd been raised a racist. Ray, death row was the only place where I never witnessed racism. We all went to bed with the death sentence on our heads and woke up that way. We had to become each other's support system. Oprah, so much so that you created a book club. I'm very proud of my book club. Ray, I'm proud of mine. Oprah, what gave you the idea? Ray, I felt society had let the men down. Most of the guys I was in with had dropped out of school in 7th or 8th grade. I knew books would open their minds. I convinced the warden to let me do it. For the first, I chose Go Tell It on the Mountain. Oprah, so you had the KKK reading James Baldwin? Ray, we also read To Kill a Mockingbird, and I thought, Tom is me. Oprah, you put it this way in your book, quote, we were all slowly dying from our own fear, our minds killing us quicker than the state of Alabama ever could. Men would do all kinds of crazy things rather than spend another night with their own thoughts. Bring in the books, I thought. Let every man on the row have a week away inside the world of a book. I knew if the mind could open, the heart would follow. End of quote. Is that what happened to Henry? Ray, on the night of an execution, they ask you 2 things. What do you want for your last meal? And do you have anything you want to say? I was told Henry said, quote, all my life, everyone told me to hate. The people I was taught to hate taught me to love. As I leave this world, I leave knowing what love feels like. End of quote. Oprah, death row taught Henry to love. What did it teach you? Ray, it taught me that either you love or you hate, you help or you harm. The men on death row had been told the world would be better without them. I tried to say that this may not be where we want to be, but let's do what we can for one another. Oprah, your mother didn't get to see you free. Ray, on September 22, 2002, my mama, Beulah Hinton, died. When the guards told me, I gave up. She'd been deteriorating a long time. I believe she died of a broken heart. I told Mr. Stevenson to forget about my case, but I also heard Mama saying, I didn't bring you up to be a quitter. I want you to fight. She was always my biggest cheerleader. When I would strike out at a baseball game, she was there to say I'd hit it the next time, to tell me how good I was. But now I heard her telling me she was disappointed in me. Oprah, because you were thinking about killing yourself? Ray, yes. The next morning I apologized to Mr. Stevenson and said I wanted to give Alabama all the hell he could. Oprah, by that time, Brian Stevenson had already been on your case for years and they still wouldn't reopen it. Ray, Mr. Stevenson said the Alabama judges would never do the right thing and that he needed to take the case to the U.S. Supreme Court. But he said, quote, Ray, if they rule against you, you'll be executed within 2 years, end of quote. I was tired of sitting in that cage. I told him to file. Oprah, Mr. Stevenson wanted the Supreme Court to review your case. They ended up vacating your conviction. Then local prosecutors dropped the charges. You were going to be free. What did that feel like? Ray, I cried like a baby. Then I asked when I'd get out. I got out 13 months later on April 3rd, 2015, Good Friday. I hadn't been to a regular church in 30 years, but that Sunday I went to an Easter service. Oprah, at one point, there'd been a lawyer who offered you the opportunity to accept a sentence of life without parole, but you didn't take him up on it. Ray, life without parole is for guilty people. When I was 12, my mother told me, quote, if you're man enough to bend down and pick up a rock, and if you're man enough to throw that rock, be man enough to admit you threw that rock, end of quote. But this rock I hadn't thrown, so I couldn't say I had. Oprah, on the day you were released, your best friend, Lester, who had visited you every single week for nearly 30 years, picked you up. You'd been behind bars since 1985. So you got in his car, and what was the first thing you wanted to do? Ray, Lester thought I'd want to get something decent to eat, but I wanted to go where they laid my mother's body. I see him messing with the radio dial, then we start driving down the road. I heard this little white lady say, quote, in 1/10 of a mile, turn right, end of quote. I jumped and said, what the hell? Oprah, you thought there was a white lady in the car? Ray, yes, and Lester's laughing so hard he has to pull over. He says, that's a GPS. When he explained what it does, it really hit me how long I'd been locked up. The world had changed. Oprah, you've never gotten an apology from the state of Alabama. Would it mean something if you did? Ray, yes. The victims' family still think I'm the person who killed their loved ones. I want them to have proof of who did do it. If the state said they're sorry, it won't give me back what I lost, but it would mean a lot to hear them say, we made a mistake, we won't do this again to someone else. Oprah, do you spend a lot of time thinking about what you lost? Ray, sometimes, especially when I think about the years I lost with my mother, I wish I could have been there to give her some cold water when she was sick, or make her some soup and feed it to her, like she would have done for me. I didn't get to say goodbye. Oprah, do you feel her presence with you? Ray, sometimes I can hear her saying, I'm proud of you. Whenever I used to get an A or something, she was always there to bake me a nice peach cobbler or blackberry pie. I don't have anyone to do that for me. Oprah, I feel like she's still guiding you, Ray. You're a good man. We'll go now to one of the special features this month, which is a review of books from the four different corners of the U.S. And this month's article is called Get Carried Away. Forget planes, trains, and automobiles. Everyone knows books are the best way to travel. For 2018 Summer Reading Guide, we celebrate the power of place, exploring the United States of books in the company of the season's best reads. We float like nationless ghosts across the internet and sometimes lose sight of how much we are still shaped by the random fact of where we were born, of the land and the living our families pulled from it, or the cities we fled to when our families grew too annoying. It's not just our accent or which baseball team we root for or whether we drink cheer wine or moxie. It's also our stories, our legends and songs and jokes and prejudices and, yes, our literature. When we get up in the morning and begin our routine, it's easy to forget that the place we see every day isn't the whole world. But it's more important than ever to remember. Some writers are particularly good at capturing place, and if that place is remote or peculiar enough, they become captured themselves a little. E.B. White will always be linked to Maine, Joan Didion to L.A., Armistead Maupin to San Francisco. From reading their work, you can learn a lot about those places, but the association isn't totally fair. You would never confuse Jonathan Lethem's Brooklyn with Jacqueline Woodson's. William Faulkner's Gothic Crumble of Jefferson, Mississippi is light years away from the human urgency of Jessamyn Ward's Bois Sauvage, Mississippi. Also important, neither location actually exists. They are imagined worlds you can visit only through the truth-telling lies of fiction. I went on a literary pilgrimage once. A friend wanted to visit Faulkner's grave, so I agreed to drive from New York in my white Buick LeSabre and pick him up in Atlanta. From there, we'd head to Oxford, Mississippi. I'd never driven into the Deep South before. We rolled down the windows and took in the sights. We reached Alabama. We pulled over at a barbecue pit in a gentleman's backyard. It was just a big outdoor chimney with fire and pork inside. The pork butts rested on a ledge just above the fire. My companion didn't approve of the cook's technique. Simply setting pork butts ablaze is not actually barbecue in his view. But when he sampled the end product, he admitted, quote, "It tastes good. Maybe that's just how they do things here," end of quote. We licked our fingers clean and got back into the car. We crossed into Mississippi. Then there were hours of gazing out at the lush beauty of the countryside, the sky darkening, the light fading on the kudzu at a slightly different angle than I was used to, reminding me that, yes, you are on a different part of the earth. We got to the cemetery late on a Sunday afternoon and spent 20 minutes looking around hopelessly for our hero's grave. It is not in my New England nature to ask for help, nor for that matter even to speak to another person if I can avoid it, but help was offered by a teenager doing lazy skateboard tricks in the middle of the road, who gave us directions to the great man's final resting place. The kid was wearing slippers that looked like big fuzzy monster feet. It was embarrassing we hadn't found the spot ourselves because it was the one with all the empty whiskey bottles left in tribute. My friend opened the fifth he'd been saving, and we each took a swig. I couldn't stop thinking about that teenager. What was his life like growing up here and now in a blue college town surrounded by deep red, living on the edge of a graveyard? How did he pull off those skateboard tricks with those crazy slippers? No Buick LeSabre could deliver me to that boy's life. That's why we have books. And this is from John Hodgman, author of Vacation Land. And the country's been divided up into the Northeast, the South, the Midwest, and the West. And what we're going to read today is a selection of books from the Northeast. And we'll do the other sections of the country in the future installments of the July issue. So we start out with Upstate by James Wood. This crisply written comedy of manners follows a stodgy Englishman and his two grown daughters as they reckon with the harsh winter, quirky characters, and lock-and-load vibe of Saratoga Springs, New York. Woods, a literary critic and himself a British expat, offers a novel that's both exegesis and hosanna. Quote, "The sun was melting the snow. It sounded as if 100 old taps were leaking, and the American sky was joyfully, piercingly, utterly blue." End of quote. The next book is Social Care by Tara Isabella Burton. A chance encounter with a dizzyingly rich socialite catapults a struggling writer into champagne picnics, Weimar Berlin themed parties, opera, and the intoxicating possibility that all her literary dreams could come true. It's a bolt of lightning friendship that could happen to anyone, but only in the Big Apple, a city where nothing comes cheap. And next, under the heading Places in the Heart, we have a quote from Sloane Crossley, author of Look Alive Out There. I have a soft spot for Bret Easton Ellis's Glamorama. The river of 90s New York names and nouns flowing through dates it, but in the best and most intentional way. The plot is over the top, which is brilliant for an over the top time. So while books like Joseph Mitchell's Up in the Old Hotel and Edith Wharton's The House of Mirth are the ultimate New York City showstoppers, there's something irresistible about Ellis's Shallow Circus. The next book is Old in Art School by Nell Painter. At 64, Painter, a vaunted historian, retires from her professorship at Princeton to fulfill the promise of her name and pick up a brush. She charts her exhilarating journey from a BFA student at Rutgers to a master's candidate at the Rhode Island School of Design as, quote, an emerging artist, but in an old body for whom art stopped time, end of quote. The next book is Invitation to a Bonfire by Adrian Selt. To Zoya Andropova, an orphan from rural Russia, suburban New Jersey appears covered in, quote, sugar glaze with sweet and personal, end of quote, houses marked by holly bushes and white picket fences. Yet the ingenue of this sultry novel feels like, quote, a girl hollow with the knowledge that she still had no home, end of quote. Enter Leo Orlov, Selt's spin on Vladimir Nabokov, who becomes the light of Zoya's life and the fire in her loins. The next book is Days of Awe by A.M. Holmes. The Manhattan fiction writer once observed that her characters say, quote, the things we don't want to say out loud, end of quote. In this exuberantly transgressive story collection, she skewers the vanities of the Hamptons plastic surgery set, among them men addicted to injecting themselves with Botox, a young Holocaust novelist's imposter syndrome, and a woman institutionalized for sticking herself with rose thorns, then dreaming of, quote, walking on water, end of quote. The next book is How It Happened by Michael Corietta. Corietta drew on his experience as a private eye to craft this harrowing suspense novel set in Maine. After years away from the town where he spent his childhood summers, a popular seaside vacation spot shrouded by deep pine woods, FBI agent Rob Barrett returns to investigate the murders of the resident good girl and her boyfriend. Like a lighthouse casting its glow across the water, his search reveals the murkiness beneath Port Hope's placid surface. We have five more book titles, and the next one is No Ashes in the Fire by Darnell L. Moore. Stranded in the urban battleground of Camden, New Jersey, amid, quote, trash-lined corners, vacant lots, graffiti-tagged buildings, end of quote, Moore struggles against a crush of bullying, bigotry, and self-loathing. He chronicles his odyssey in this piercingly vulnerable memoir, ultimately finding his way to LGBTQ activism and black joy through faith and family. The next title is The Dependents by Catherine Dion. For Gene, who's lost his wife of 49 years, grief is an uphill trek through dense New Hampshire forest with no compass. Alone, he obsessively questions the past, especially this. Was Maida happy with him? Dion's resplendent debut ponders the ficklessness of, excuse me, the fickleness of memory and the human propensity for nostalgia and self-doubt. The next title is Little Panic by Amanda Stern. Stern's frank, funny memoir about living with anxiety, eased and compounded by a peripatetic childhood amid the gritty glamour of late 70s Greenwich Village, will have chronic worry warts laugh crying with recognition, especially those who think clocks exist only to remind them that time's running out. Our next title is Tenemental by Vicki Warner. Forget the marriage plot. 26-year-old Warner is after a plot of land. She buys a century-old triple-decker house in Providence's Federal Hill neighborhood, known for its Italian-American community and its drug-addled ne'er-do-wells. In this ebullient memoir, she excavates the experiences of being landlady to that needy bitch of a house, plus tenants who break bathtubs with sledgehammers, the permeating smell of reefer and sounds of Black Sabbath, and a late night near debacle involving burnt toast. And our last title from the Northeast is Sick by Porachista Kapoor. Journeying from Iran to the Tarangalis of SoCal and then to New York, the motherland for misfit creatures, Kapoor is a citizen of the world, but a foreigner in her own lime-struck body. Her searing memoir about trying to make peace with a chronic illness redefines both dislocation and belonging. Let's move now to the Live Your Best Life section of the magazine, and we'll take in some articles on a page. One of them is entitled Take Note, and the heading is The Man Show. Young Gene Lee finds the drama in white guys. Give young Gene Lee a button, and she will push it. Her 2009 play The Shipment was a send-up of black stereotypes a la Chappelle's show. 2011's Untitled Feminist Show was a dialogue-free burlesque featuring a naked female cast skewering gender tropes. While Lee's experimental gusto has won her accolades, including a Guggenheim Fellowship and two Obie Awards, her work hasn't exactly been Sunday matinee material until now. When her latest, Straight White Men, premieres July 23rd, Lee will become the first Asian-American female playwright ever produced on Broadway. A naturalistic piece starring Armie Hammer, the play centers on three adult sons spending Christmas Eve with their dad. But rather than parody the suddenly much maligned demographic, Straight White Men explores the perils of privilege, ultimately asking, what happens when a person with every advantage doesn't achieve what he's expected to? Lee, who's 44 years old, says, quote, "Straight white men are struggling right now. They used to not be put in a box. They used to just be people. Now they're an identity category with stereotypes. They're experiencing something the rest of us have felt for a long time." End of quote. But lest it seem that Lee has gone mainstream, the show opens with hip-hop blaring and gender nonconforming people of color as MCs, called Persons in Charge in the script. Mock speechifying about difference and discomfort. That edgy framing makes one thing clear. It's storytellers like Lee who will help the Great White Way find a new way forward. And the picture of Lee accompanying this article shows her in a brightly colored floral blouse with one hand, with her chin propped up on one hand, and her brunette black hair. Her black hair is in a little bob, and about 3 or 4 inches of the bottom of the hair have been dipped in a deep indigo blue dye. The next article is called One to Watch. Yes, Will Be Yours, and there's a picture of Fred Rogers. Though Fred Rogers presided over a land of make-believe, his show, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, helped generations of kids navigate the real world. The documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, chronicles Rogers' quest to create TV that transcended. With simple sets and puppets, the cardigan-clad minister helped viewers cope with feelings about everything from war to the bathtub drain. When Rogers spoke at a 1969 Senate hearing to defend funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, instead of crunching numbers, he made a heartfelt speech. Subcommittee Chairman John Pastor got goosebumps. CPB got to keep its funding. Rogers never forgot that kids were people, or that every person was once a kid. And the next article on this page is mostly pictures of ceramic artwork, and they're all floral designs with perfect, detailed, tiny petals. The perks of making a wallflower. Garden variety, not Vanessa Hogue's blooms. The London ceramist sculpts wall pieces and vases out of hundreds of handmade porcelain petals. We asked Hogue about her decorative dahlias, daisies, and more. She says, flowers offer endless patterns and possibilities, so I don't think I'll ever make a collection of dogs or cats. Flowers are what I do. And we have some of the decorations here. Decorative pieces. The wall art, which is pictured behind us, is most of it is circular, almost like you've sliced off a part of a ball. And it's decorated with lots of flowers, basically. The first one here is in that kind of off-white porcelain. It has tiny, tiny flowers underneath and then large daisies on top. But again, it's all white. Bye-bye, die. The artist says, is there a more pleasing combination than black and white? My current work is mostly unglazed because I don't want to disguise the intricacy of the petals. And the one beside it is, it looks like elegant Asian artwork from someone who has had decades to work on making little tiny petals and arranging them with perfection. And this one is in black, and it's just tiny, tiny petals in concentric circles that gradually get larger and larger. The artist says, I can spend anywhere from 1 day to 3 weeks pinching and shaping the flowers for a single piece. The best feeling? Attaching that very last one. And then there's another version of that piece in white. Then there's a vase which almost looks like intricate coral, the really fine coral, and it is just a perfect, perfectly smooth, bowed, tall vase. And her comment here is, I was raised in South Africa, and the women in my mother's family were extraordinary gardeners. When I make these pieces, I feel like I'm channeling those matriarchal figures. Let's look now at the O Beautiful section of the magazine. And on our first page of O Beautiful, we have the heading, Glow Sticks. To sport a gorgeous sun-kissed complexion, you could spend the summer strolling the piazzas of Rome, or try an infinitely more affordable option, a sophisticated modern highlighter. The skin-friendly, creamy texture and ease of use will have you saying arrivederci to pressed powder formulas. Just dab a few dots or a subtle line over the spots where you'd naturally get color. Your cheekbones, forehead, the bridge of your nose, and blend with your fingertips. Bellissima. And we have a blonde here looking at us with her kind of hazily brown eyes. She's got this real porcelain complexion and some nice kind of pink, corally pink lipstick. And she's got a glow from her cheekbones kind of to the temple to above the eye. So here are the highlighters. Golden Girl. For Right Now Radiance, try one of our picks, and there are three of them. The first one, Milk Makeup Highlighter in Lit Champagne Pearl, $24. Go to milkmakeup.com. Ciate London Dewy Sticks Luminous Highlighting Balm, $26 at Sephora. And Avon True Color Illuminating Stick in Champagne, $11 at avon.com. And now when we turn the page, we have some tips to help us with the heat. Hot Mess SOS. Heat plus humidity equals potential beauty crisis, but help is here thanks to five true experts, women for whom rough skin and frizzy hair are all in a day's work. Their real-world solutions will help you sail through the season gorgeously. And the first picture here is of a surfer. Malia Manuel surfs the waves of the British Virgin Islands, and they're catching her as she's skirting right above a cresting wave, long hair flowing. So this is our first of five, summer bummer, dry brittle hair. The expert, Malia Manuel, professional surfer, 24, from Hawaii. The ocean, good for the soul, not so great for your hair. Briny seawater can dehydrate strands, leaving them straw-like. So Manuel saturates hers with quenching oils regularly. She says, quote, after every surf, I use a treatment with marula oil to bring back shine and help detangle, end of quote. She likes marula oil, rare oil treatment, $41 at paulmitchell.com. And a friend turned Manuel onto essential oils like cedarwood, which helps soothe a dry, flaky scalp. She says, quote, I add a few drops to my shampoo, end of quote. Manuel exfoliates daily with a body brush to keep her skin soft. She says, quote, after I slather on a calendula-based oil blend, which helps with circulation, end of quote. And there's an Aromatherapy Associates London polishing body brush, $32 at aromatherapyassociates.com. It's kind of an oval brush with a wooden topper and a leather strap to help you hold it. And then there's a picture here of the big brown bottle of the calendula oil. And it is Infiore Calendula Solution Botanique, $175. Now, our second bit of advice is number two, summer bummer, parched everything. The expert, Alexandria Cochran, a flight attendant. She's 27 years old, and she's from Minneapolis. If you think your AC chilled office is drying, try working at 40,000 feet. Cochran says, quote, the recycled air, the constant change in oxygen levels, it all leaves your skin very thirsty, end of quote. Her hydrating musts include a rosewater face mist and fish oil tablets. She says, quote, the fatty acids in fish oil help hydrate from the inside out, end of quote. After a particularly long flight, she'll use a sheet mask, saying, quote, they're easy, usually cost less than $5, and come in so many varieties, moisturizing, calming, nourishing, end of quote. Cochran discovered Malin and Guts Lip Moisturizer, $14, in the first class amenity kits and has been hooked ever since. She says, quote, it has a matte finish, goes on smoothly, and moisturizes instantly, end of quote. Now, at Walmart, you can find the Pond's Hydrate Plus Glow Sheet Mask for $2.50. And then there from Mario Badescu, there's a facial spray for $7, and it has aloe and herbs and rose water in it. Now, from our third expert, Muriel Olivares, we have summer bummer, roughed up hands. Muriel Olivares is an urban farmer. She's 35 years old and lives in Miami. For amateur gardeners and pros alike, frequent contact with soil and water wreaks havoc on the digits. To the rescue, Olivares's homemade salve. She says, quote, I got the recipe years ago while apprenticing with a farmer in upstate New York. I make it with my farm-grown calendula, beeswax, and virgin coconut oil, It does it all. Treats dry skin and chapped lips, soothes cuts, scrapes, and sunburns, and just generally moisturizes, end of quote. When she can't whip up her bespoke balm, Olivares uses Wooden Spoon Herbs Heal All Salve, $12 at woodenspoonherbs.com. She also says, I always wear a sun hat, which makes my hair really sweaty, so I have to wash it every day. She prefers gentle baby shampoo, which doesn't overstrip. And the shampoo is Babo Botanicals Moisturizing Baby Shampoo and Wash, $14.50 at babobotanicals.com. Number four, summer bummer, pesky buggers and scorching sun. Our expert is Elizabeth Berkeley, forest wildlife biologist. She's 37 years old and lives in Pendleton, Oregon. Since she works in the woods, Berkeley is well prepped to deal with all varieties of chomping little pests. She says, quote, when bugs are an issue, I recommend DEET-free, waterproof mosquito patches and natural insect repellent spray, end of quote. Try Don't Bite Me patches, $11 at don'tbitemepatch.com, and Repel Lemon Eucalyptus Insect Repellent, $5 at Target.com. And, of course, she uses SPF religiously. She says, quote, I also like a powder foundation with sunscreen. The Bare Minerals version is so lightweight, I can't even tell I'm wearing it, end of quote. And there's a picture here of the Bare Minerals Original Loose Powder Foundation, SPF 15, $29. Go to bareminerals.com for more. And then there's Coats Sensitive Sunscreen, SPF 40, $23. And they show a tube of that here at dermstore.com. And finally, number five, summer bummer, not so fresh feet. The expert, Simone Spigner, tennis coach, 49, New York City. Running around after many tennis hopefuls in the blazing Harlem sun keeps Spigner on her toes, but by the end of each day, her dogs are barking. She wears absorbent, moisture-wicking Adidas Superlight socks, $18 for a six-pack. Go to adidas.com. To cut down on perspiration and alternates her sneakers every day. She also massages her feet with a few drops of lavender essential oil at night. She says, quote, it helps me relax and wind down. I apply it right before going to bed, end of quote. Sweet dreams. There's a bottle here of Now Lavender Essential Oil. It's $19 at iHerb.com. And there's a lavender nail polish, Jinsoon Nail Polish in Birdie, $18 at jinsoon.com. And one final thought. Spigner credits her callus-free life to weekly soaks with Johnson's Foot Soap, $3 at walgreens.com, and regular pedicures. She says, quote, I love pretty colors on my toes, end of quote. And now at the beginning of the magazine, we have a page called Let's Talk, and it's reader comments about previous issues. Standing O is the headline. In May, you applauded two Broadway stars while finding common ground and a look to love. So we have a picture of the May cover, which Oprah was sitting in some white pants on a step in a white shirt with her hair parted in the middle, pulled down, you know, just flowing down on each side. And then we have a reader who sent in a picture of herself in some white sneakers, white pants, with her arms kind of resting on her thighs, and she's looking forward in this white t-shirt. And we've got a comment here. Kid tested. Oprah's black and white cover inspired Houston second grader Zanari Woods to recreate the crisp and cool look. And we have a quote here. Roll call. Before she made her Broadway debut as Hermione Granger in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, we spoke to Noma Dumas Whitney. Under Her Spell was the title of the article about the big shoes she had to fill. One of our followers could be the perfect understudy, saying, I'm black and my name is Hermione. it's been a struggle to carry such an unusual name for 57 years, so I was thrilled to find it in the Harry Potter books, and it's an honor to have two phenomenal actresses play her. This is at Hermione underscore O-N-I-E. And under the heading, What Can We Agree On? All for One. May's big question was one of the biggest yet, and you came back with inspiring answers. At Real Dawn of the South says, quote, we all want to be safe, live healthy lives, and be treated as equal, regardless of our financial or phony societal statuses, end of quote. At Sophie Rachel O'Connor, we have the quote, the planet can survive without humans, but humans can't survive without the planet. And at Fly underscore the book, Beyonce is the best to ever do it. Now, under the heading Lead the Charge, in her What I Know for Sure column, Oprah asked readers to come together for gun control. You approved. At Lifestyle with Melissa Morgan says, this is so true. People are walking around without any care in their souls. All these senseless killings and disregard for human life have to stop. And then he said, she said, when Oprah sat down with Tony and Pulitzer winner Lin-Manuel Miranda to discuss our divided times and how we can move forward in This Is Us, they got virtual praise. At St. Seville says, my heart was so happy when I saw them speaking. Two open hearts and thought-provoking minds. Thank you both for your work. And to wrap up this installment, this month's question is, how would you spend your perfect day? And Juliana O'Hare of Reno, Nevada says, at a spa with my mom and five sisters. We're spread across the country and haven't spent a day together in years. I'd love to reconnect with them. And Pam Root of Boise, Idaho says, I'd start by taking a short bike ride to enjoy my outdoor-friendly city. The afternoon would be spent on the river, and in the evening I'd have a picnic with friends at the local outdoor Shakespeare Festival. And Lindy Lewis of Toronto says, I'm an introvert, so my perfect day would involve unplugging from everything. I would get up early to have my morning tea, then go to the lake to enjoy my surroundings, catch up on my favorite books, and write in my journal. And with that, we've run out of time. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Susan Dellinger, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.